Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 641, Ask Farnoosh with special co-host Alicia Schiller.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Karabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Welcome to So Money, everyone. It is Friday, October 20th, 2017. Welcome to the show. What's going on? It's a very crazy week for me. I've been doing some speaking this week. I had a retreat. I'm in a mastermind. You know what that is? Is anyone here on a mastermind? Raise your hand. It's a pretty cool way to network and get stuff done. This is something that I recommend all of us try to do in our professional lives, is to find people that are go-getters and really create a structure around meeting up. Maybe that's once a month at someone's home or once a month at a restaurant or a coffee shop. You set an agenda, you catch up, you share resources, you do hot seats, what's on your mind, what problems do you have? And, you know, groups anywhere from 3 to 5 people. I think this is a really smart way to expand your network and tap into resources and leverage your friends and your colleagues in a way that's not awkward. So you're not like going to networking events or, you know, asking someone that you don't even know to help you connect you to someone that you don't even know. This is a much better way for someone to get to know you and to really feel like they want to vouch for you. So masterminds, that's where I've been for the last 2 days. We had sort of an intensive this week. It's been really productive and really good. That's just my little So Money moment of the week. Today, we've got a special co-host. And as always, it's a listener who's been listening to the show initially as she was commuting to her job, which was taking almost 2 hours each way. Happy to report she's no longer doing this commute. But I want to learn more about this faithful listener of ours. Her name is Alicia Schiller. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Farnoosh. Thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for being here all the way from Connecticut. Not too far.
Not so far. I guess with traffic, though, it can be a bit of a bear.
It can be. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to a financial podcast.
Sure. So I'm 33, and like you said, I live in Connecticut, in Norwalk, which is a town on the Long Island, on the Long Island Sound. I work full-time in Connecticut at a financial technology firm where I do e-learning development. And I also run a side hustle as a independent career advisor. I guess what brought me to a financial podcast, actually yours was one of the first ones that I started listening to all those years ago. And it just sort of struck something in me and realizing how important it is to know what's going on with your money, to really make the most of it and to plan for your future. So I've been digging into it ever since then and trying to learn as much as I can. So it's a dream come true to be here with you today.
A dream come true. I hope you have bigger dreams than this.
I have some, but this is a pretty big
this
one.
This is a pretty big one. Tell us how you have implemented some of the advice on the show into your life. And tell us, like, what are some of the goals you've been hitting or been trying to hit?
Well, I know you always talk about how important it is for women to make more. And I think I learned about several people on the podcast who have started side hustles. And I don't know that my side hustle will turn into a full-time career for me, but it is something that started because I love the work and I really enjoy doing what I do. But it's nice to have this sort of additional income stream and be able to diversify where my money is coming in from and really build a more secure future.
In what ways are you diversifying? Did you have loans? Are you putting it more towards retirement, a home?
Trying to, right now, our main goal is to really bolster our emergency savings. We bought a home about a year and a half ago, and since then have paid off a car loan and bought a new car with cash. So we're at that point now where we really want to sock away as much as we can in that emergency savings, because buying a home comes with a lot of other expenses as well and unexpected repairs. And so that's been our main goal at this point, in addition to making sure that with my full-time work, I do have enough that I'm setting aside for retirement.
Yes. Well, I love that you're a homeowner. I am too. Our first question is from Ashley. She's only 23, but she's interested in buying a house. And she lives in Chicago, which I believe is a little bit more of a better first-time buyer market than maybe New York City, but it's still expensive. You know, Chicago is a big city. But here's her situation, okay? So she's 23. She makes $75,000 a year. She has $28,000 saved. Way to go, Ashley. So now she wants to buy a condo in Chicago. Her budget is $150,000. She has 20% to put down. And so she wants to know, is this a good investment? Okay. I hate the word investment when it comes to real estate, although I totally get it. I probably use it more than I should. I just think that it is not a safe mindset to have when you're thinking about real estate, unless this is like a second property or specifically a rental property that you're looking at to make capital and be cash flow positive, renting it out. That is an investment. But if this is your first home that you're going to live in, it's maybe a starter home. Ideally, yes, you go around and you sell it in 5 years and 10 years at a profit. But I think that most important is that you're approaching this purchase with the mindset that this is going to be affordable and that this is going to be a smart move. And what does smart mean? It means that compared to maybe paying rent, you will be saving a little bit of money month to month based on how much the mortgage is plus all the other costs, that you might be getting more bang for your buck, that you might be able to live in a neighborhood that's safer, better, that you may be able to, in 5 or 10 years, run the numbers and do the projections, see what historical gains have been. May, you know, if you do hold on to it for a while, is the neighborhood on the up and up? Is it appreciating? You may be able to develop a little bit of an equity in the home or a little bit of a nest egg. But it sounds like financially she is set to be able to budget for $150,000. I think a bank may give you a bigger pre-approval. They may say you could buy as much as $200,000 or $300,000, as banks do. Sometimes they take your salary and they multiply it by like 3 or 4. But which I think is very aggressive. But I think in this case, your budget is twice your annual income. You've got a lot of savings. And I think that that's a conservative approach. What do you think, Alicia? You think she's like in a good zone?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is really impressive. I definitely didn't have this much money saved when I was 23.
I know. I was in debt. I was in a lot of debt at 23.
I was going to say, I would also add, she mentioned she has this $28,000 saved, but I would want to know, does she have additional money on top of that for the down payment, or is she planning to drain her savings for the down payment? I would just want to make sure that she does have some additional funds set aside for unexpected expenses and emergencies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And also the closing costs. There are a lot of upfront costs to buying a home. One is your obviously the down payment, and then there's the closing costs, which can be anywhere from 2 to 5% of the sale price. So Ashley, just make sure that you have more than enough. That if 28,000 is all that you have saved, that you either need to reduce your budget to something more like, I don't know, $100,000 in order to still put down the 20% and then have some extra left over for closing costs, or continue to save. Use the rest of the year, the next 3 months, to save. You know, the last 3 months of the year are not the hottest buying months of the year. So I feel like property could sit on the market for a longer than average time. If you're not ready to buy now and you've seemed like you have found your ideal place, it's okay to maybe wait a little bit longer if that does mean that you'll be able to be more financially secure. So good luck, Ashley, and let us know how it goes. I always want to know the other side of the question, which is, you know, did the advice help? What happened? Did you get the place? Send us pictures. All right, Alicia, the next question is from Jolene. I'll have you read it off and tell us what's on her money mind.
Okay, so Jolene wants to help her parents who have never invested for retirement. She's 31 and they're 67 and 74. They currently have about $80,000 in cash that they keep handy. And while they're getting by for now, Jolene's concern is that they don't have enough should they need long-term care. So they don't have long-term care insurance and neither of them has a will. And she wants to know, where should she start helping them?
All right. This is such an important question. And I think there's probably many people on the phone who are either in the same situation or nearing this situation, or they're in it and they don't know where to start. And it's a reality that we have an aging population. I read the other day a statistic that was really sobering, which is that most people approaching retirement have very little, if anything, saved for retirement. And I'm talking about people who are in their baby boomer, I guess the baby boomers who are like about to retire now, they don't have much. And that could have been a result of the financial crisis that, you know, really cut off a lot of people's savings and investments and the equity in their homes that they were hoping to bank on, or they just didn't save. In this case, Jolene's parents just never really, never made that a priority. And so it's great, I think, that they have this daughter, Jolene, who wants to help. And I think the first step, Jolene, is to, if you haven't yet, to start this conversation with your parents and get informed, so that you really know what are the real numbers, what is the reality, what's the value of the home. If they had to basically retire today, and using all the assets and the money that they had available to them, what is that? What are their social security payments? Are they getting any pensions? she says here that there's some background that her mom works part-time in food service and her dad does collect a small pension. They own a rental property that brings in some income, and both the rental home and the one they live in is paid off. So that's really comforting. I think that is better than nothing, right? Right. It's better than like they have a mortgage and they're unemployed and they don't have any pensions coming in. That's actually, I think, a good sign that they can at least keep status quo for a while. But as she smartly brings up, one of the biggest wild cards in your retirement is your health. Am I going to have a quality life for many years? Will I get sick? And what will that cost? Will I need assistance? Truthfully, at 67 and 74, buying long-term care now is either going to be ridiculously expensive or they won't even qualify because the insurance companies don't want to take on the risk of, say, insuring a 74-year-old who is at a much higher risk of getting sick and needing the assistance of long-term care than someone who's, say, in their 50s. Who's going to be paying into it for many years, decades perhaps, until they, if they need it. So I would say, Jolene, the most important thing you can do, and at this stage, is to really just bring yourself to your parents, say, I want to help you. I know that this can be uncomfortable, or you may not think that I, as your daughter, should have to worry about these things, but I really want to be here for you. And start with asking them, what do you want in your retirement? What would, if you had to retire tomorrow, and let's say, God forbid, one of you did get sick, what's the plan? Create these scenarios for them so that they can start to really think about, you know, what would be their plan B? What would be their contingency plan? Would they sell the rental property? Would they sell their home and downsize? At the very least, if there's stuff lying around the house, Alicia, what do you think? They should start selling it, right? Have big yard sales.
Oh, absolutely. I think anything you could be doing at this point to bring in a little bit of extra income, like you said, selling things. I know her mom is working part-time. If she can increase her hours just a little bit, for now. And I think the other thing that I would add is that it's sort of like the oxygen mask falling from the airplane. You make sure you put yours on first. I would really want to make sure that Jolene has herself in a financially stable position so that if she does need to support them a little bit more down the line, she's able to do that.
That's so important. You brought up the most important point. Yes, that she should make sure that she has savings, that she has reduced her debt or has erased it or is on a path to do that. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, 67 and 74 is not old. We're living longer these days, and hopefully her parents are in good health. But there may be a day, 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, that they'll really need her help financially or just her assistance wise, you know, since they're not going to necessarily qualify for long-term healthcare, I think, it's going to cost a lot of money to go into nursing care or bring in someone to the home full-time or even part-time. So it may fall on Jolene to, hopefully if she can, you know, spend the time with her family to support them. Or maybe they move in with you or you move in with them temporarily. I mean, this is the stuff that people have to really weigh. And most important is that you are financially checked, that you have your ducks in a row, that you know, if you do give them money, that you don't feel like it's going to compromise your financial life. And if it helps, start putting aside money now just for this purpose. I do that, believe it or not, because I'm totally conservative. Mm. And my parents are in good health right now, but they have helped me so much in my life that I would feel terrible if they needed me and I was not in the situation to be able to do so comfortably and readily. So at the very least, I'm putting aside a little bit of money, you know, just so that I know that I can, you know, immediately help them if they need it. I don't think they will. Hopefully they won't. But it's, you know, one of those things where it helps you sleep better at night.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/sewmoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/sewmoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/sewmoney. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. All right. Nicole has a question. Give it to us, Alicia. Something about saving and investing and budgeting.
Yes. And it's a personal question. She wants to know how you personally save, invest, and budget. If you could share percentages in any preferred platforms you recommend, and if there are ones that you've discontinued using.
All right. So I actually did this podcast, I guess it was a couple of months ago, on Listen Money Matters, where I talked all about how I spend and save, but it was a lot about how I spend. So I would encourage you to go and listen to that. And I also got interviewed on So Money by a friend, the host of Stacking Benjamins, who interviewed me way back in the day. So if you go to SoMoneyPodcast.com and you type in Stacking Benjamins, because he was the host, Joe from Stacking Benjamins, he interviewed me on So Money. So I gave a lot of my own advice and tips. But just to recap briefly, I do a lot of the boring stuff first. I save first, I invest first, I put money in the retirement accounts, the mortgage, the insurances, the kids' college accounts. I do all the sort of, you know, long-term or boring stuff. I call them boring stuff because it's not like very thrilling to, you know, pay off your car insurance or pay your car insurance, but you need it, right? It's all the necessities. So it's the needs first, which we hear about all the time in Finance 101. And then with whatever's left in my checking account, I know that I can spend that without guilt and without regret and assuredly. So that's kind of how I do it. And I keep it all kind of in my head. I use QuickBooks for my business budgeting and my business, the cash flow. I have a great bookkeeper who helps me organize all of that. I have an accountant that tells me how much I have to pay quarterly in my taxes because I am self-employed. I do that. And I assume that from every paycheck that I make, which is inconsistent, I make money, like some weeks I make a lot of money, some weeks I make no money, some months I make no money, some months I make more, all the money for the year. It's just, you know, I've gotten used to it because I've been doing this for so long and I have a cash reserve to help with some of the gaps in income. But it's really about having a good team, tapping into these resources like QuickBooks. I also use Mint for my personal finances. And this way, I check it all the time. I also check my own bank account individually, my credit card account individually every day, because sometimes when you go on Mint, although it updates it like within a snap, I just like to also go in and just verify that everything is apples to apples. And that's how I do it. I mean, I don't know. What else did I leave out? Percentages. Oh, yeah. As I was saying, for every paycheck that I make, I assume that 40% of it is not mine. Actually, 50%, because between paying my agent and paying the IRS, it's about half that has to go to someone else, other people besides me. So I have gotten to see money in a different way. The paychecks that I get, I usually just take off, you know, 50%. And that's in my mind how much that I have to bank. Things that I've discontinued using, honestly, nothing. I've never really signed up for a lot of things. I've really much stuck with Mint and QuickBooks. And although I've had a ton of cool technology founders, fintech founders on the show, and I recommend their products, things like Digit and Acorns for people who want to invest on the go, Digits that lets you save on the go, and it's nominal and easy and automatic, and it's great. For people who have a hard time saving even just a little bit, Digit is a wonderful solution. Alicia, what do you use, and if you mind sharing maybe some of your personal financial management with us, how does that look?
Sure. I'd say it sounds pretty similar in terms of making sure that the savings and the retirement are the first priorities, and obviously taxes, which just gets taken out, so I don't have to worry about that. In terms of tracking and budgeting, we're pretty strict about that. We keep a budget on it's everydollar.com. It's actually Dave Ramsey's website, and the reason I like it is because it's pretty bare bones. It's a manual process. I have to go through the exercise of typing in all of my expenses, and I really like that because I like having the control and ownership of making sure that I sit down a couple of times a week and categorize things appropriately, and it helps me to stay on top of things. I know that Mint and other sites make the process a little bit more automatic for you, and they help you to categorize things, but I like to be able to have that control. So that's been really helpful. But I have just even used a spreadsheet in the past just to track all of our expenses and our spending and make sure that we're sticking to a budget.
Spreadsheets don't lie. I mean, and I love spreadsheets. I used to use them in the early days when I was living in New York City as a young singleton. I would use budgets, Excel spreadsheets all the time. And it was important, I felt, for me to type in the numbers as opposed to just have them automatically register. Because for some reason, it just made me really understand and know what I was spending. And I think when you're first starting to budget, that's very helpful because you need that relationship with money to get strong, mm-hmm. and to really feel sometimes the pain of just how much you're spending on the stuff that you probably don't need to be spending on. And that's how you make those realizations, is when you really go pen to paper, or, you know, keypad to Excel spreadsheet.
Right. And I will say that there have been more than one time that I haven't bought something because I didn't want to have to go type it in later.
Yeah. Yeah. You become accountable to yourself and to that and to that spreadsheet. And when you see it, that can be a little difficult to stomach. Okay. So we have a question here from Michael. How do I move out of my parents' house if they are dependent on my $1,400 contribution to the $3,400 a month mortgage? I net around $3,500 a month. So I've never gotten this kind of a question. I mean, we hear often where the adult children live with the parents. Sometimes, a lot of times, rent free. I encourage parents to charge some rent, but because I really want the kids to appreciate the fact that they are able to, you know, have this relatively affordable housing, and also encourage them to move out one day, because, you know, like living with your parents is one thing, but then paying to live with your parents is like, seriously. So this sounds like, though, that his parents really are dependent on his contribution. So that's a hard thing to break up. Any advice?
Well, I mean, I hate to say, I don't know if all of their children are adult age at this point, but it might be time for them to downsize. It sounds like it's a pretty significant mortgage. And if they're really relying on his rent for that in order to be able to pay that, when he doesn't need to be living at home, it might be time to downsize.
Yeah. Sure. It's not an easy answer, but this could be the way that their parents get the wake up call. If this is really something that they are dependent on, then either they need to downsize the house, which is it's a lot of effort to do that. It's not going to happen overnight. In the meantime, they may need to just look at ways to cut costs in other ways. And if there is a way for you to still help them out, if that's something that you feel comfortable doing and want to do, maybe, you know, even though you're not living there, you could still help them out, you know, because there are parents. And I firmly believe that if my parents came to me in needing financial help, it's serious. They don't do this ever. And so it's probably really serious. And if I'm in a position to be able to help them, then I would. And so if this is something that is really going to hurt your family in the short run, you moving out, them trying to scramble to figure out how to make this mortgage, maybe you help them a little bit, not to pay the $1,400 a month, but a few hundred dollars a month in exchange for, you know, going over there and eating out of their fridge from time to time. But if you have siblings, then maybe this is time to have a family meeting, you know, and talk about the home, the family home, and what we should be doing about it, because it's not financially affordable at this point if it's just mom and dad living there. I don't know how they feel about Airbnb-ing it. That's a very, I feel like the older generation may not be as quick to Airbnb their spare rooms out, but hey, it's what people are doing and how they're supplementing their mortgages. So, it's working for other people. It might work for your family. It may not, but something also to bring up. Have you ever done Airbnb, Alicia?
I haven't. I understand the value of it, but we don't have a ton of space and it would just be a little bit close quarters, I think, with a stranger.
Yeah. I have been a lodger at an Airbnb. I've checked into Airbnbs in Paris, had great experiences. I think that if we had the kind of place where, you know, we could offer a spare bedroom to somebody who would have their own entrance, or we would go away for the weekend and they could stay here, we would be open to it. I don't think our building allows it, actually. We're in New York, so the laws here are a little tricky circumnavigating Airbnb, but I fully support it when people can make a way to supplement their mortgages from it. Last but not least, we have a question from Melissa. She, I think, has gotten some bad advice. I will just say it. She met with a financial planner, Alicia, and he strongly recommended that she get whole life insurance. That's the type of life insurance that has cash value and it's permanent. And this person encouraged her to do so to save money, as a quote unquote safe way to save money. P.S. She's 29, has no kids, and is in good health. Oh my gosh. I don't want to say you're getting robbed here. You haven't gotten robbed yet, but I do think this is a bad idea. I think that what he forgot or she forgot to tell you was that while yes, the cash value is guaranteed, and while that may be quote unquote safe to as a way to save, it's dang expensive. People who tap into whole life, people who apply for whole life insurance, who get qualified, who then start making these very big premiums payments every month, when they lose a job or when cash gets tight, this is like the first thing that they forfeit. And you don't get all that money back. Like all the money that you put into it, if you miss a payment, you're done, you're out. And that's a very expensive regret that a lot of people have is tapping into whole life insurance. You're 29, you have no dependents, and you're in good health. So, I mean, I don't even know if you should get term life insurance at this point, frankly. The people who are best positioned to apply for life insurance in general, I think, are people who have dependents. People who have children, who have maybe parents that they're supporting, anyone that you're financially supporting who may be at risk because you die and you haven't had any savings, you have debt, and now these people need to still go to college or your family still needs to pay their mortgage and you've been supporting them, that's when life insurance is imperative. But if you're 29 and you don't have any dependents and you're healthy and there's no sign of you getting sick or anything like that, I mean, I think you can still wait on the life insurance portion of your financial planning. And certainly no need to get cash value life insurance, because I'm pretty sure that's going to be very expensive and not really necessary. It may become something that you consider later in life, depending on how your life, where your life takes you. But right now, I don't see a need. I don't have enough information to really see as this being vital. And you're in the financial sector, Alicia. I don't know if you have any run-ins with this kind of stuff, but what's your take on this?
Well, this was me about 7 years ago or so. We met with an insurance salesperson who came to our house and told us all about how amazing of an investment whole life insurance was, and we did go for it. And a few years later, after actually doing some research and learning more about it, realized it was a terrible investment and ended up surrendering and losing all of that money we had put into it. But yeah, it has terrible returns. And as far as I know, your heirs don't even get the cash value after you pass away. It just goes right back to the life insurance company. So I think it's terrible. And I'm wondering actually if this financial planner is actually an insurance salesperson.
Right. And regardless of their title, if they are giving you retirement advice, which is not really what life insurance is, although a lot of people, in this case, the whole life insurance, I think he's positioning it as like a way to plan your retirement because this is like savings that you could tap into later on down the road. He absolutely needs to be disclosing, or she, I'm assuming it's a he. I'm so sexist. I'm assuming.
He strongly recommended.
Oh, she did say he. Okay. So yep. It wasn't just in my head. He should tell you how much money he is positioned to make off of this transaction. I'm pretty sure he's going to get a commission. And, mm-hmm. That's not to say that it's not trustworthy advice, but it's suspect. And so I would talk to some other people. I would talk to a certified financial planner who is a fiduciary and get their opinion. And there are many out there who will have a first consultation with you for free. So do that and let me know if I was right. I'd love to know. But stay away from this for now. I don't think you need it. Alicia, thank you so much. Alicia Schiller, thank you for giving us so much great advice, for listening to the show, and for being a financial role model. We love you.
Thank you, Fernie. She had a lot of fun. You want to do some more questions? We can keep going.
Oh, I would love to. I'll have to have you come back. We definitely have enough questions, but now I got to go off to another.
I know. I'm kidding.
Off to another errand, but I would love to continue talking with you. You're fabulous. Stay around, stick around, and until next time, everyone else, I hope your weekend is so money. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.